So here's what we know then. Liverpool have scored more Champions League goals than anyone this season. Harry Kane is the first player to score 9 goals in his first 9 Champions League games. And Premier League clubs have scored more goals in Europe's finest competition in the last 2 days than the previous 2 seasons. But what haven't we heard enough about? How about the referee completely bottling the booking of Neymar for a second time? Probably that and more coming up on the Totally Football Show. I'm Caroline Barker, sitting in for James Richardson, who's off trying his giant slalom, or whatever it was described as a few moments ago. Maybe we'll get more of that. From European football journalist and broadcaster, the two aren't mutually exclusive, possibly, James Horncastle.
That's me. Thank you, Caroline.
Now has his own show this week.
For 1 week only.
You're a fraud. You're such a fraud.
Let's underline that, for 1 week only. Alongside him, but separated by the rose between the two thorns, French football journalist, the two are mutually inclusive, are they not, Julien Laurent?
Bonjour.
A former Premier League keeper. Premier League as in Keflavik. Is that how I say it? Turned yes. Journalist, David Priest.
Oh, that's the biggest build-up I've ever had.
Yeah, I've dropped the Keflavik early. In talking of build-up, I've rooted something out special just for you, because it was Valentine's Day, you know, that commercially insensitive day of the year. Did you ever read Buffon's poem to his goal?
I did, yes.
Oh, yeah, so you don't need me to read it.
Oh, no, you can do it. Please read it.
Yeah, no.
It's worth the second listen.
I don't think I've got the tone. I've dropped the Essex flat vowels. I won't read it, but you can look it up.
There's a very good impression of Gianluigi Buffon.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to speak Italian, though, to get it. Otherwise, you don't.
What, who's saying we don't all speak Italian?
Well, I mean, he's just got a very loud kind of...
Banana.
But, yeah. There you go.
What was that, Italian for banana?
No, that was I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Yeah. Yes, clearly, as I understood that. Should we start with Juve then, 2, Spurs 2? I mean, that one was a tiny game, wasn't it, Jules? Nothing to talk about?
Insignificant, small
game. Yeah, not much. James will probably explain it better than me. I was a bit surprised how Juve... I know that's what they do. They did it against Napoli when they scored early at home and then sort of played much deeper and controlled the game like that, very defensively. And I did think maybe they played deeper a bit too early against Juve. I think I think they had Tottenham on the ropes already after 2 goals so early. And maybe if they'd pushed on a bit more, could have been different. All that said, I still think that if they'd taken their chances in the second half, penalty included at the end of the first half, and in the second half as well, because they had, you know, they had options on the counter-attack, it could have been a very different game. But well played to Spurs, and especially Moussa Dembélé, who for me put out the best individual performance we've seen all season. For every club, every player, Messi included, and all of that.
Man of the match the last 3 games, I think, from Dembélé. Right, you can explain it better than James.
Look, when I first saw the Juventus starting 11, I thought, wow, he's really going for it, Massimiliano Allegri, because it was a very attacking formation. And that's why I don't think, when they took the lead, they made the decision to just sit back and basically soak up all the pressure and try and hit Spurs on the counter. I think what Allegri said afterwards is that it wasn't a choice. Spurs did that to us. We could not do anything about it. I think that's a great credit to Spurs, who not only for the character that they showed in coming back from 2-0 down, but for playing like the home side for long spells in that game, dominating in that game. And Juventus did not have any answers. And look, there are people making excuses for Juve in the press conference afterwards, saying, well, you're missing Matuidi, you've had to change formation, you couldn't play the 3 in midfield that you wanted to, you were missing Dybala, you didn't have the other players on the bench who, you know, you could then go 3 at the back. But Allegri wasn't hearing any of it. He was like, Spurs were the better team tonight.
Mm.
He thought Juventus played well because, as Jules mentioned, they had the chance to go 3-0 up, they had the chance to go 3-1 up. I don't think that should be forgotten. But Spurs were brilliant, and their evolution in Europe this year is breathtaking when you consider that they got knocked out of what would be seen as a favourable group last year, much more favourable than the one they got this year. They get 4 points from 6 against Real Madrid, they beat Borussia Dortmund, they then go to Juventus, they come back from 2-0 down. There's not really much more you can ask of this Spurs side. Jules mentioned Dembélé. I thought Eriksen was fantastic on the night as well. I thought Ali and some of the runs he made caused them problems. And, yeah, as Eriksen was saying afterwards, you know, when he first joined the club and they went 2-0 down that early, they crumbled. They used to lose, you know, regularly 4 and he, 4-6-0, and he said, "Yeah, this shows just how far this group has come." And so I think, you know, rather than pointing out where Juventus could have done better, we just have to take our hats off and say, actually, David does have a hat here, which I could take off. You know,
he's already done it.
And say that was magnificent, Spurs.
That's the kind of giver that you are, David. Well, although you'd probably like to give some stick, maybe for one before.
This is it. It's kind of like sacrilege. Even though when I was tweeting at the time, it sort of my finger hovered over the send button just because I didn't really want to do it. But you have to question both goals, especially the first one. It's very unlike Buffon. He always sits deep in his goal. He'd always back himself against a striker, even a striker like Harry Kane. And he just made a rash decision to come out. And in the end, it was nout or something, really, was it? He didn't come in and engage. He didn't, when he did get there, he didn't slow up and try and slow him down. And he made it very easy for Harry Kane. And with the second goal as well, you have to be critical because he's looked at Eriksen. And he's thinking he's going to go over the wall, and he's trying to creep to his left, and Eriksen makes him pay the price. And this is what got to me a little bit, that if he'd done his homework, he would see that Eriksen is very capable, especially coming in on the from the left side, of whipping in the near post. He's always trying to test goalkeepers, like Hazard did on Monday night, trying to making out he's going to go one way and then just whipping inside. He's got that capability.
Stunned you into silence, Jules.
No, but I agree, and I you know what, we've had a debate with James a long, like many times, about Buffon, and is it the Chesney has done so well every time he's played this year, that is it the year too many for Buffon? Clearly on Tuesday for me it was. There's that save on the Harry Kane header. It's more Harry Kane missing that header than Buffon saving it. There's a shot from Harry Kane that he couldn't even catch, that the ball bounced okay in front of him, but that's something he should catch every single time. And instead, he I don't know how you say in English, but he spilled it, exactly. And he was like, what's going on? And, you know, he should be the one that makes the rest of the team so confident, so solid. And instead, I'm not sure what Benatia and Chiellini were thinking, but they were surely not thinking nothing would go in tonight because it was so shaky, I think.
The first goal does come from Chiellini anticipating the play, coming charging out, trying to win the ball, I think off Eriksen. He does initially, then he slips. And that's where I think, provokes Buffon to come out, because all of a sudden they're wide open. There's only Benatia there, and he thinks, I have to take the position that Chiellini
but
was.
But not like that, but stand tall.
It's a wrong decision.
Why? He goes in like a train, isn't he? And then it's easy.
But he does stand tall. He doesn't go down. That was his.
But it's kind of a. He just gives up on him because he knows he's not getting there, and he pulls out because he doesn't want to give away a penalty as well. But the fact is, because of the type of keeper he is and the starting positions he takes up very deep in his goal, he's not the type of keeper who's going to come and take that ball anyway. He's not like Lloris.
The Buffett Bowler says, thank you everyone, by the way, that's got in touch with the Totally Football Show via social media. If Dembele was allowed to drive a tank on the pitch, would he be more or less powerful? Ben says, Eriksen and Dembele, best midfield performance in the Champions League this week. And Sai says, is this summer going to be Pochettino's and Daniel Levy's biggest test, given the money-rich vultures, new stadium and wage demands? How quickly we want to see the whole thing implode if we're not a Spurs fan.
Look, I think nights like Tuesday night will give the manager and the players the belief that they're achieving something special and that they can take Spurs to new heights. And that, I think, would heighten their resolve to commit and to stay. I think that is another reason why performances like that are so important for Spurs.
So there's a bit of paper talk that Spurs are going to offer Pochettino a new deal. Telegraph saying it's going to be a five-year deal, 2016, worth $5.5 million a year to hang on to him. Also talk around where the players go next. Lamella, is he off to Inter Milan? Talk about maybe, and this is what happens, I guess, when some of these players stand up. And Juventus, apparently, have inquired about Jack Wilshere. That's the other side of North London. Shall we rock on, perhaps, then, to a win for Liverpool? 5-0 at Porto. So many stats in this, Jules. You can pick out anyone you want, or you can just say Liverpool, which is the noise that invokes from me.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can make the same noise as you did, but this is what happened in my house last night. I couldn't watch PSG. I couldn't watch it live. My heart wouldn't take it. So I watched the first half of PSG, and I recorded the Liverpool game. And then at halftime of PSG, I said, I can't do this anymore. So then I watched the whole Liverpool game. And only after that, knowing the final result of the PSG game, I watched the second half of PSG. So I watched all of Liverpool. And I bigged up Porto going into this game because I was really impressed by them when I saw them in the league, in the Champions League as well against Monaco. They came out of a tough group with RB Leipzig as well and Besiktas. And I really thought they would do better than that. And they were just destroyed. I thought they started well. And after that, Liverpool was just... When they have that sort of movement up front, you know, even if you try to put intensity on them, if you try to be aggressive against them, if you try to, you know where the danger is going to come from. And Porto knew that. You know, they're not a bad team, I promise you. They just couldn't cope. And I think when it's not Salah, when Salah only scored a worldie, it's Mane. And when Firmino is not in his best day, he still scored a lovely goal. When James Milner starts and you think, Milner, really? He's like 100 years old? He comes out and maybe was even the best player on the pitch for Liverpool. Mm-hmm. So they're incredible. And Virgil van Dijk is looking stronger and stronger and stronger. So Porto is no Juventus, but it's a very Spurs-like performance as well.
Yeah, I think the maturity that Liverpool showed on the night, again, was commendable. You know, a lot of people pointing out the attacking stats that Liverpool are putting up, but this is the, I think, third game they've gone away from home and they've kept a clean sheet, which, you know, given everyone keeps going back to, you know, are Liverpool solid enough defensively to win something, you know, I think this points that this team is coming together and moving in the right direction.
David Priest, how old are you?
41.
So you got a few years on the 32-year-old James Milner, who's been put out to retirement. For you, at what point did you look at that Liverpool team and think, five goals in them?
They've got every game, they've got five goals in them. And I think this, we talk about how bad Porto were and how good Liverpool were. But when they break on teams like that, and it's very little you can do defensively. That, like, the little flick around the inside by Firmino to Salah. It's so difficult when you run towards your own goal and the momentum's with the forward side, and they just it's always the same. It doesn't matter how fast you try to recover. The forwards are always got that run on you, and it's so difficult even when you position yourself and you're just trying to recover. The way they passed the ball as well, it was just so clinical and so incisive.
But that point that Jules was making about Van Dijk, what's he given? If you're a keeper who apparently both keepers have been decidedly dodgy up until he walks in, what's he given to them?
Well, I tell you what, there was one incident in the second half where the ball was played into, it was pumped forward into the Liverpool box. There was very little danger. It was going straight to Van Dijk. Karius has come out and it should have been an easy early call. Van Dijk just drops his head, leaves the ball, and Karius picks up. But there must have been some sort of miscommunication. Karius he arrives late, and all Van Dijk does, he just heads the ball away. There's no questions asked. He defends the ball first, and then they can argue about it later. And that's exactly what's been missing. In the past, with Lovren and maybe Mignolet and Karius, that would have ended up as a fumble. They would have got each other's way. It's his calmness that's spreading throughout the side. Now, you look at somebody like Lovren, he's been criticised a lot, he's made his mistakes, but his biggest problem has been his sort of his demeanour and the way that he handles pressure. Mm. And you can see that sometimes when he's getting yellow cards or he's chasing after the referee, and he totally loses it. And I think that's more than anything, it's the way that Van Dijk handles situations and handles pressure. That's what's spreading throughout the side, especially at the back four. And that's the difference. He's taking control of situations like that.
That point, again, about Porto's heaviest home European defeat, they were completely undone by this Liverpool side.
Look, I mean, they were missing some key players. Aboubakar was injured, Danilo was injured, Felipe was suspended. But I would hazard a guess that even if all those players had been fit, Liverpool would have still ran out handsome winners. Maybe not 5-0 winners, but the same questions that they asked them last night would still have been there. Mm. And, you know, I think there are very few teams in Europe that would go into a game against Liverpool confident, even at home, of keeping a clean sheet just because the amount of damage that those three can do.
I think there's a lesson to be learned for Chelsea and Manchester United here. If you look at both games this week, it's because of the attacking intent of both sides. Pochettino's got to be given great credit because at 2-0 down, okay, you've got another leg to turn things around. But what do you do that at that moment? Do you try and get an away goal? Do you try and just defend and keep it down to two because it looks, well, it should have been three? So what do you do? And he's stuck to his principles, and it's worked out for him. And same with Klopp. They've put themselves in such strong positions. And I think, like I said, it's a lesson to be learned for Jose Mourinho.
And equally, what do you do if you're Porto or Basel now? How do you approach that second leg?
Send the kids for the second leg.
Too right. Looks like they did first off. At the Totally Show, for your thoughts then, they're off for a break now at Liverpool. I think they're off to
Marbella.
Yeah. As are we. We're not, but if you want to, I'm up for it.
Valentine's Day is long gone and the FA Cup takes centre stage this weekend, and it really doesn't get any sexier than Chelsea versus Hull. Well, with Paddy Power's Money Back Special, if you place a bet of up to £10 on the Friday night game at Stamford Bridge, you'll get your stake back as a free bet if Chelsea win. It doesn't matter if they wallop the Tigers 8-0, come from behind, or edge it in the 90th minute. A win's a win, and Antonio Conte needs one. T's and C's apply, so head to paddypower.com to find out more. Applies to losing goal scorers, correct scores and what's odds paddy markets only. Maximum bet is £10 and applies to the customer's first bet on the game. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, stop.
This is the Totally Football Show in the company of James Horncastle, Julien Laurent and David Priest this week. I'd like you to rate them. We've done Spurs, we've done Liverpool, they did for themselves. When you throw in Man City and their performance in Europe, Jules, how does that rank against the other two?
Quite high, although it was only Basel, I'm sorry. I know they beat Manchester United, but...
That was only Manchester United.
It was only Manchester United, and it was in a group stage game as well, and... I don't think there was anyone looking at this game before kickoff thinking, oh yeah, City might struggle there. They might be, and okay, you know, I think Basel started well and Oberlin had sort of a good chance first. Stocker could have gone through one on one with Ederson straight after the first City goal, but they were just so good. I mean, I reckon if they want, they can play a giant Rondo in a Champions League match against Basel. And if they want, they cannot not lose the ball for 10, 15 minutes. Literally, I swear, they could pass the ball to each other and not trying to score. Just keeping the ball. Keeping possession for 10, 15 minutes. At that level, they're that good.
Should we try that for the second leg? I mean, I've just stiffed you with Manchester United. I've just stiffed you with Pep Guardiola too. That old adage, you've got to beat what's in front of you. But they just look like they could put their foot down again, James.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They hit the accelerator straight away and got the job done as quickly as possible. And for a team that is fighting on four fronts, to be able to basically have the second half not off, but basically, you know, make it into a training session is the way to manage your resources in a what could be a historic unprecedented season where City win every competition in which they're in. And you know, I think from that point of view, yeah, you can say, look, it's Basel, they were always going to win that game, but the manner in which they won it will help them achieve their other objectives.
Mr. Gribble says, have the English clubs got better in Europe or have the European teams got worse based on those performances from the Premier League side this week?
I think the English teams are finally beginning to play to expectation. I think it's been the cause of some perplexion on the continent that for all the wealth in the Premier League, for all the money, they've underperformed really since 2008. Even with Chelsea winning in the Champions League in 2012, they haven't really turned up. And now... Not only because you have five teams in the competition all making the knockout stages, there is this sense that, you know, their time is finally coming. That, you know, all of the kind of money that has been wasted on certain players, on certain managers, and more money hasn't necessarily made them smart. It's made them a bit stupid in some cases. Finally, they're getting it together. And, you know, you only have to listen to some of the managers of the other top clubs in Europe, from Juventus to Real Madrid to PSG, saying the Champions League is going to be harder this year because of the English teams finally getting it together, because of all these great managers being in their second or third season, because they've had a couple of transfer windows to build the depth, get the first team where they want it to be. And, you know, the great thing about this match day from an English point of view, all three English sides go away from home and they get 7 points from nine. It's and they're all playing this week because they top their groups. It's pretty intimidating from a continental point of view.
Talking of intimidating, if you were watching the other small game this week, you might have been intimidated by some of the tweets. Riley writes, after the performances from Ronaldo and Neymar in the Champions League, do you think that Real Madrid would have been worse off with Neymar had a switch deal happened between the two clubs? And Matt says, a PSG basically Arsenal. The match that you recorded, taped over, watched back four times, Jules. Shall we talk about that one then?
Do we have to?
Yeah.
Okay. First, there's still hope because you lose 3-1 away from home, then you go home. I think 24% of cases before in that context, the team that lost in the first leg still go through.
You know it's bad when you've gone to find the 24%.
But I do even worse because I go back to 1993 when PSG lost 3-1 to Real Madrid in the UEFA Cup quarterfinals first leg. And then at the Parc des Princes, won 4-1 and went through. So PSG have done it before and to Real Madrid as well, albeit 25 years ago. And you know what? I don't think there was much in between. I'm not saying, first, I didn't think it was a very good game of football. I thought, okay, there was a lot of speed, but not enough control considering the players they had, especially both teams in midfield. You thought Verratti, Modric, Rabiot, Kroos would control that game a bit better for the respective teams. Anyway, I didn't think it was a very good game, and I don't think there were much in between the two teams. I mean, Real Madrid scored one penalty, one goal with a knee, and one goal with a shin. And that's pretty much it.
Areola made a couple of good saves as well. He was slightly more busy of the two keepers, though.
But he made a mistake on the second goal, cross. I don't know what you think.
But even
on the third one, I know Marquinhos deflected first, and then he seems surprised, and he only brushes his fingers.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame him so much for that one. But that was the one concern I had over Areola, especially when he first came to the club, that he has hard hands. He pushes the ball back into dangerous areas. Now, he's, you know, very agile. He's a great shot stopper, but that is his biggest problem. And up until now, it hasn't really cost him. Now that it matters, it probably would put it down to him.
It shows a lack of experience as well from Areola, I think, in that game. It's a starting 11 with an average age of 24.5. Real Madrid, for example, is 29.5. That doesn't mean that because you're younger, you're going to lose, but it shows that after that great save in the first half from Areola, it's a corner and they switched off. Real Madrid play quick, and then Kroos is in the box. Lo Celso put his hand on the shoulder. It's a penalty. Okay, if that's a penalty, the Ramos handball is a penalty as well, in the other hand, not long after. But the ref doesn't give this one. So I'm going to rant about the ref a bit later because I'm a PSG fan.
A Rocky Horror Show. But Gianluca Rocky.
Yeah, I think so. But that inexperience, Berchiche at left back, first ever game in the Premier League, in the Champions League, sorry. Lo Celso in midfield, first ever start in the Champions League. So you take risk with young players and sometimes it pays off with Kimpembe. Sometimes it doesn't. Kimpembe makes a mistake on the second goal by sort of like losing the ball when Ronaldo comes pressing. I think either he gets scared or he anticipates the foul. There's no foul because there's no contact. He gets rid of the ball and the ball comes back straight at them and they score. So it was a game where they were so close and in a way so far as well. But there's a two or three counter-attack in the second half that they should have taken better, I think. I'm not sure about Emery's coaching again. I don't want to bash him because I always do.
There are plenty of others.
He's bloody dreadful. The guy annoys me so much. And Zidane, in fairness, his coaching worked much better. So there's still hope, although I would say, and then I finish my rant, that there's no way PSG can win the second leg 2-0 because Zidane is a very Italian coach by essence. He learned everything he knows from Juventus and from Italian coaches. There's no way that Real Madrid team, so experienced as it is, could, I think, be beaten 2-0 away from home in Paris. So
you don't think Neymar purposely wanted this to happen so he could do what he did to PSG but to Real Madrid in the second leg and lead one of those massive clutch comebacks?
I would love it. And you know what? People criticize him in France, in the papers, on Twitter, people sending me messages. I don't think he played that badly. No. There were times where he dribbled past the whole team. He's just in the last pass or the last decision making, he got it wrong. There's a couple of times he should shoot. Instead, he waits an extra second too much and then try to pass the ball or the shot is blocked. There's a couple of passes where he made all the difference and then he's a bit hit it too strongly. I don't think he was that bad.
And yet. But,
and yet the Gary, end product is not maybe good.
Gary, who I'm just throwing it out like you'll know Gary. You know Gary.
Yeah, Gary.
He says, do the PSG players hate Neymar? Rabiot's comments were surely aimed at him. The comments were, it's all well and good putting 8 goals past Dijon, but it's in matches like this that you have to stand up and be counted.
Oh. Well, I'm really interested by the dynamic at PSG because before this game, he drops the captain, Thiago Silva, because he's not enough of a leader. He drops Kurzawa. They've all had like pops at each other over the last, few weeks. Pastore doesn't like Thiago Silva. You're having these Brazilians like Lucas Moura has gone to Spurs. It doesn't seem like a very healthy environment for, even with all the talent that they've got, all the money that they've spent, there doesn't seem to be that togetherness that I think you need when you go to play at the Bernabeu. Because, I mean, in fairness, for Emery to get the starting 11 wrong, which in my opinion he did, for him to get his substitutions wrong, in which he did, for Neymar, in Jules' opinion, not to play that bad, the beginning of the final 10 minutes, they had two chances where they could have probably scored the 2-1 and a 3-1, and they didn't. And Real Madrid ended up doing that. So we're talking fine margins.
Yeah. The danger is, though, with players like Neymar, it's that if they don't win the game on their own, then everyone thinks they've failed or they haven't played well. And it's not the case. Not the case at all.
Mm.
And another thing about the team spirit, and I never really get the fact that teams to win competitions and to win cups, they don't have to be living in each other's pockets and going out drinking every weekend. Like, you know,
did you used to have that one teammate who you thought, I don't really like you, but
I used to go out every weekend with all my teammates, and that's why we never won anything. So there's a lesson there.
You put your hand in your pocket. Yeah. Of course you did.
That is a point, though, because Neymar and Ronaldo share the same birthday. And Ronaldo, for his birthday, February 5th, stays at home with the family. Neymar had, 3 days of partying?
Two days.
Misses a Ligue 1 game.
Yeah, the one is 26, the other one is 33. So
I'm not going to call into professionalism, but
no,
still.
No, but
Ronaldo keeps coming back, keeps doing it.
Boom. I just think Real Madrid can raise their game better than anyone else. They're never really dead. They're always there. Even if they're struggling and they're under pressure like they were in that second half, they find a way. Like that block from Ramos on that, on Kimpembe's shot on the corner. He's extraordinary. I mean, I don't really like Sergio Ramos. I think he's a bit of a tool, but that was immense. And, you know, the leadership. Yeah, and the leadership that he shows, whether you like him or not, you know, there was a foul in the first half from Cruz on Mbappe. It's a bad foul. And Ramos comes over and basically tells Mbappe in whatever language, like, you dive, then, you know, who are you? And they start, like, abusing him. And I'm thinking, like, this is a leader. And whether you like Sergio Ramos or not, whether you think that he's a bad person because he, you know, he get people sent off in Champions League finals and do things like that, he's a leader. And I think what this PSG team is lacking is a leader in that sense, or what Ibra used to do. Because when Ibra was there, he kept everybody in line. And if someone was not happy, he would sort them out. And right now, Neymar is not happy because Lucas is gone. Neymar is not happy because Thiago Silva was dropped. Neymar is not happy because he thinks Emery is a bad manager. And then that creates a lot of unrest in the dressing room, like James very rightly said, and also sort of a bad atmosphere in the dressing room. But they're still in it.
I don't know about you, but I've really enjoyed this session today. Thank you, Jules, for coming on and sharing some of your
thoughts. Therapy session for Jules.
Yes, exactly what it is.
And it sucks to someone. Thank you.
I'm glad you've offloaded it on us. If you want more offloading, but in person, you can join us for the Totally Football Live show in Dublin on Monday, March the 19th. Over half the tickets have now gone. Jules and James are going to be there, and Pat Nevin is also on the panel with his DJ set.
Yeah.
Any particular tunes you'd all like to spin?
I'm curious to see what Pat comes out with.
I know, me
apparently
too.
It's a massive night.
It is massive.
So, yeah.
And that is the qualification, at which point David looked up from his phone. Where he was
a massive
also,
night out, yeah.
Yeah. He can enjoy it massive with the fans and the team too. So if you want to be there, just head over to ticketmaster.ie for all the information. Shall we talk about the greatest cup competition on the planet? along with the Champions League. The FA Cup rolls into the fifth round this weekend. Plenty of little delights. And thank you to FA Cup Fact File, who supplied me with lots of different facts about this. And well worth a look from the extra preliminary round onwards to others are available. Any in particular you'd like to pick out? I'd like to look at Sheffield Wednesday against the mighty Swansea.
The Carvajal Derby.
Now, is it Carvajal? Because Paul in Philadelphia, go Eagles, some of us were there, don't like to brag, says, you've all been saying Carlos's name as Carvajal, but that is a Spanish pronunciation, and Carvajal is Portuguese. The proper way to say his name is Carvalhal.
Yeah.
Yal. No, Carvalhal. Carvalhal.
Okay. Ah, Carvalhal.
Mm.
Okay.
Carlos.
Yes.
He's such a nice man. He would not mind either way.
Yes, that's true.
However, you could pronounce his name in any way you want, and he would still give you Portuguese pastries. You know.
And he would come up with a line, like a funny line as well about it, probably.
Over the past year, it's sort of been a bit of a novelty, me watching, sitting in on managers' post-match interviews, and he's probably been the one where he actually looks like he enjoys being there. Yeah. And his press office asked to pull him away from the rest of us, like, you know.
Do you get to go and have the one-on-one conversations with him too?
No, I'm not that lucky. I'm still working my way up the ladder. Come on, Colin.
I think we should. I don't think you need a ladder to talk to him, but I think we will make that happen. Has he, when he talked about Jules putting the meat in the barbecue from his team, and these other lines about swimming from the bottom of the ocean to the top now and nearly reaching the coast, is the FA Cup a priority, or are we going to get that old, we'll rest a few players because that momentum then won't happen for the league?
No, I think the momentum is important. It's important to keep it going as well, you know, and I think a very important match where they win against North County, because, you know, they scored a lot of goals as well, and he gave them an extra confidence. Even if you scored against North County, whoever you scored against, it's always good for you and for your own confidence to score goals and to play well. And I think they took that then into the league, and it would be a shame for them to then sort of go back to losing and being like, because you're miserable when you lose, even if it's the FA Cup, even, you know, Sheffield Wednesday, especially when it's a lower league team. So no, I think it's very important for them to keep winning, keep that momentum, that confidence going, and then take that form into the FA Cup and then again into the Premier League.
Well, for that, you kind of read Brighton. They're up against Coventry as well, one of those teams that are on that. I think we did last show, there are about 52 teams that could still go down out of the Premier League. But for Brighton, for Chris Hughton, is that a priority?
I think it's an opportunity for them to give some game time to the likes of Jürgen Lokadia, their big signing in January. You know, they signed him with a hamstring injury. Brighton, I think, have done very well to get Glenn Murray to do what he does in the Championship in the Premier League. You know, that was something that was always a question mark about him.
Are you saying he's not a Premier League player?
I'm saying he very much is now, because, you know, I think there was some concern. You know, when the summer transfer window closed and they didn't have the striker, he's shown he can do it in this league and has been very good for them. But I think this will be an opportunity for Lokadia and also Ulloa as well, who they signed in January, come back to the club. So, yeah, I think in that respect, yeah, it's a chance to get these new players in, integrate them, so they can then have an impact in the Premier League. But then again, yeah, Coventry will have something to say about that as well.
Yeah, Coventry did all right, didn't they? Beating Milton Keynes in the last round, took over 8,000 with them that day too. Brighton, for Chris Hughton, I think it takes time, doesn't it, to bed in clearly to the Premier League. It's a bit of a break for them.
Yeah, it is. I'm really impressed with what he's doing there at Brighton. I went down there a few weeks ago to take a look at their keepers and just interview a couple of them. And they've got a really good setup, especially with the goalkeeping department. They've got a very good scouting network. That's how they end up with Matty Ryan, somebody I've talked about him before on this podcast. I think he's going to be a brilliant goalkeeper. He is a brilliant goalkeeper now. And he made his mistakes in the first few weeks, and he's just getting stronger and stronger. But this weekend, there's a chance for Tim Krul. Another chance for him to come back, who's had his trouble, his injuries. He's been here, there and everywhere the last couple of seasons. And it'd be good to see him back playing as well. But my old manager, Mark Robbins at Coventry, he'll have them set up and be very hard to beat. And that's exactly what he does with clubs. And he's doing a great job at Coventry, because it could be so easy for them to come down and then just keep plumbing it as well, the circumstances they're in at the moment.
I was just going to ask you about the keepers on the hard hand scale as to where they sit.
Hard hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Than Areola?
No, I mean, Areola's probably he's a good nine. He's a good nine on the hard hands.
Who has the hardest hands between the sticks?
Well, I don't know. Probably, I'd be a good 11 out of 10, mate, to be honest with you, when I was playing. But he's got very... Who's got soft hands? Who's got very soft hands?
I've got soft hands.
Yeah, I've got soft hands as well. No.
You don't do a hard day's work.
What about Hugo Lloris against Juventus?
Do you know what? I think even when there's a Pjanic who played the ball in for Higuain, there's no way he's played that ball in for it to be played first time. Mm. So, and the only person in the whole stadium who's thinking about hitting that first time is Higuain. Nobody else. And it's a surprise factor that hits him there. And the penalty, okay, Lloris gets down to it. But I think he didn't get the credit he deserved for the Higuain miss because the fact that he stayed up so long. Quite often you find it, somebody the same taker taking the same penalty, they will go straight down the middle. And that's what Lloris, he sort of assumed that. Mm. And because Higuain can see that he stood there, he's made him lift the ball even higher.
I know James is listening to this right now thinking I'm going to make hard soft hands a regular feature. But just while we're on this, and we'll move back to the FA Cup, Ian says, what's David's opinion even on Wayne Hennessy? Continued debate amongst Palace fans, he said.
He has been better this season. I've been critical of him in the past, and he has probably played below the level that's expected of him. He always struggled a little bit at Palace, and then went away and played well for Wales, but couldn't translate that back to league form. But it's probably no secret that they were desperate to bring in another goalkeeper. I know that Spironi's injured as well. They've only got one fit keeper at the moment, so that's a bit of a problem for them. But in terms of Spironi, I know that he asks about Spironi there, who he says he's very reliable. He is. And he saw almost like, I don't know if you remember Stefan Kloss at Dortmund, he's very much in the same mould as that. He's a very line keeper. His reactions are like lightning, but anything apart from that, I'm not saying he struggles with, but he's not at the same level as everyone else in Premier League. And I think that it's only a matter of time before Wayne gets replaced.
That is the end of this week's Hard Hands, Soft Hands feature. It's nearly the end of Jules as well. We've got about 5 minutes left with you. As much as I would like to dig deeper, it's because you're off to interview whom? Or are we not even allowed to mention that?
Yeah, we can. I'm going to see
it's
Olivier
Barack
Giroud,
Obama.
Yeah.
You
can watch the interview before the Chelsea Hull game on Friday evening in the Champions
League. I just completely spoke over who you're going to interview.
Sorry, Olivier Giroud before the Chelsea Hull City.
Remember not look in his eyes.
I know him well. Yeah, no. We go back a long way, him and I.
That's 3 minutes wasted on Giroud's eyes.
Sorry.
No, I very much enjoyed it.
Are you a Giroud?
I mean, physically. I am Giroud at the weekends.
Okay.
That's what I do with my weekends. What's the sexiest thing happening in France this week then?
Well, we still have an amazing race for second, which is a feature that you can find in a lot of big leagues. I mean, in Italy, you've got a big fight for first and second, so that's a bit different. But in Germany, certainly, in England as well, who's going to finish behind City? You know, and same in France, behind PSG, Marseille and Monaco now have taken a few points ahead of Lyon, but it's still very much a big race there.
And before we let go, what's happening with Balotelli's yellow card that he picked up?
They're looking at it. So they're looking at the racist allegations that he made, saying that he was racially abused by the Dijon fans. They're looking to see if they can find any proof of it, and then obviously they would look at that yellow card. I think it would be rescinded, to be fair. But it was a very interesting weekend last week in France with a huge game to finish it as well, and it would be another good one. And PSG against Strasbourg at home, so let's hope there's no hangover from that Madrid defeat.
Yeah, Balotelli, of course, booked for complaining about racial abuse. That's you done.
Caroline, you're much better than James Richardson.
Classic.
Off he goes, and there he leaves.
Listeners, starting up the Totally Football Show was a hairy business. Fortunately, Cornerstone have been with us every step of the way. Why? Because they're in the business of making hairy things smooth, like your face. Cornerstone's award-winning blades will give you the smoothest shave possible. And their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see the range for yourself, get £10 off your first order and have it delivered right to your door. And you'll find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
As Jules walks out the studio, that gives us just a chance to plug another Totally Football quiz on Friday lunchtime. How does it work? Just get yourself over to facebook.com, the Totally Football Show, at 12:30 GMT. Prizes this week include a rather nifty shirt from classicfootballshirts.co.uk. It's actually the 2016-17 Fiorentina home shirt, which described as, David, you had a look at this earlier, It's a bit purple with the yellow cuffs.
It's beautiful. That's what it is.
That's all you need to know. A signed copy of Rafa Honigstein's book on Jurgen Klopp and a copy of the new Football Manager game. If you want all of that stuff or to be in with a chance of getting any of that stuff, just head to facebook.com, The Totally Football Show, at 12:30 GMT on Friday. Right, the rest of the FA Cup, or the rest of the FA Cup as opposed to the R that I dropped at the start then. Leicester, Sheffield United on Friday night. Outside of Manchester United, Spurs and Chelsea, Leicester, you can even take a breath then, David. Leicester are pretty much favourites for this. I'm just going to wipe out the rest of the competition.
Well, if they put out the full side, they made a lot of changes last time. Didn't they make 10 changes last time, was it?
Yeah.
So it depends what side they put. If they want to put a strong side, if they want to take it seriously, then yeah. They
could. But don't you go for it? I mean, why wouldn't you?
Well, they should do. They're in a comfortable position. Like you said before about Swansea, winning games, you know, breeds confidence, so why not go for it?
Yeah, no, I think this is a competition that they should be aspiring to do something in. And I think they've been actually very impressive so far in the FA Cup. You know, Kelechi's probably been player of the tournament so far. It's just, you look at what Sheffield United are doing, and they find themselves in a different position in that they think, do we rest a few players here so we can push on into the playoffs? That is a conundrum a lot of managers, regardless of whether they're in the Premier League, are asking themselves at the moment, which to some extent is a shame for the competition. But you know, it just shows the disparity in financial. You know, getting into the Premier League means more to a club than going deeper in the FA Cup.
Chris Wilde will get it right. At the start of the season, there was article upon article upon article being written about Wilder and what a decent manager he was. He'll turn stuff around again, and they are sort of picking up those points again.
Yeah, and he's all, any job that comes up now, I mean, when the Sunderland job came up, he's linked with that as well, and he's just done a fantastic job there. And just going back to the point about Leicester wanting to win this, you know, it means more to win to managers at clubs like that than it does to the ones further up. You know, there's been a discussion this week about, you know, Pochettino, but, you know, you can't really say anything or praise him too much because he hasn't won anything yet. But like people's pointing to Arsenal, it's not done Arsene Wenger any good winning these cups, is it?
What about step forward when it's not done anyone any good winning this cup and someone that possibly needs one? One Jose Mourinho. They're at Huddersfield on Saturday at 5:30.
Yeah, well, they've lost earlier in the season. But again, Huddersfield look at this and think, we've got a big Premier League game against West Brom to follow this, which could be decisive in deciding whether they stay up or not. What do we do here? But I think, you know, if you look at some of the players who've started to do well under David Wagner and who he'll probably look to rest, the rotation in the striker position from Meunier to De Poitras, something. De Poitras was, you know, was excellent against United in that win earlier in the season. So, yeah.
But I think a lot will ride on what happens whether he decides to play Paul Pogba or not, and whether he gives in to, well, the talk this morning that Pogba's saying that he's not been playing the right position, he wants to be playing further forward. Yeah, there's probably an element of truth to that. But I think that's the problem with Paul Pogba. I was at the game, the Newcastle game at the weekend, and the problem with Paul Pogba was not where he was playing, it was just how he was playing. It doesn't matter what you play in the pitch, you can still control a ball properly and pass the ball properly. And he did neither of that. And he was actually, it wasn't a consequence of them going 1-0 down. They were actually preparing to take more 5 minutes before Carrick was getting warmed up. So
whose problem is that? Is that Pogba's or is that Mourinho?
I think,
or is that a combination?
Well, I think if you're going to take on Mourinho like that and be so public about it as well, I mean, I don't know where this has come from. I think it was in the Daily Record this morning. But if you're going to be that public about things, you're going to come up against a problem with Mourinho, because there's only going to be one winner. Paul Pogba's, you know, most expensive player, and it won't mean anything to Jose Mourinho, and I think he obviously just wants to win games. But they're not going about the right way at the moment. I will go so far as to say it, they were awful at the weekend. Even though they can say that Newcastle were lucky and they deserve to win just because of the effort they put in as well, but I think, Lukaku and Pogba, they were so sluggish. It was, I don't know whether either of them will play this weekend.
You're not alone in that view. And if you want to hear others' views on how United were a stinker at the weekend, you can hear that on Monday's show. Also, yours, James, this week, which I hear was the best rated podcast of all time. I saw one of the tweets in reaction to your performance this week on Golazzo.
Yeah, that was from one lovely tweeter who I did not pay. But yeah, we were very privileged. We had an interview with Asif Kapadia, who's the BAFTA and Oscar winning documentary maker who was behind What Senna and Amy, who's currently cutting his latest one, which is on Diego Maradona. So we got to reflect on Maradona's time in Napoli. So yeah, give it a listen.
Well, here's a little taster.
There is nowhere more perfect than Naples for Diego Maradona at that point in time and that version of Naples. Mm. It was a really edgy place then. I mean, the crime and the kind of the gang violence and the kind of Camorra and organised crime violence, it was at a peak, particularly in the 80s. And then a city that's just coming out of an earthquake. Italy's got loads of money. There's a lot of money being put to rebuild the city, but it's generally it's the place where everyone wants to be. You know, as a filmmaker, if you're lucky, you find a character, you find a story, you just think, well, you couldn't make this up. And then you look at, well, who's playing, you know, at Juve at the time and who's playing for Udinese? You've got Zico. You know, what I love is when you get this archive footage, seeing these players. So Zico pops up and then you'll have, you know, Platini is there. And then a few years later, you're going to have Van Basten and you'll have Hullet in their prime, Rijkaard, Klinsmann, you know, and the players, unbelievable.
I did very much enjoy listening to that, or will enjoy listening to that, depending on when anyone downloads this part of the show. So what are you, James? That sounded condescending. Didn't mean it to. Talking of condescending, you both gave me that look when I talked about the FA Cup. I blooming love the FA Cup, mainly because I've been participating in it since the early rounds back in the summer, such as
did
the joy of non-league football. Oh, yeah, but we don't talk about we went out last year. I have previously been able to feel the old balls in the velvet bag. I've had that honour, and it is a bit of a joy. Mm. You think of the history that it is steeped with it. Maybe that's why my love affair with all things FA Cup continues. You ever had a chance to pull out a draw or done a draw for any cup competition?
No, I've been playing the FA Cup a few times. I've probably had my worst moment of my career in the FA Cup as well.
Why?
I think it was 1997, playing with Darlington against Wolves. It was my first game ever on live TV. Mike Stowell pumps a long ball forward there, Wolves goalkeeper, and the ball I think it's headed back by Andy Crosby, defender, and I'm at the edge of my box and I just go to pick the ball up, and in my head I've already thrown the ball out wide to the fullback, and just as I go to pick the ball up I've come up too early and the ball goes straight through my legs and Miksu Patalain just taps it into an empty net.
I was just YouTubing that, as everyone.
Do you know?
Else
well, it is actually on YouTube. Go and watch it. It's a joy.
Actually going to have a look at it right now. Whilst I laugh in your face, clearly not publicly. Is that the one moment that haunts you?
Oh no, there's far too many. It's like a cemetery inside my head. You know what I
mean? Here is the YouTube clip aforementioned. Should we do a new segment? Watch with Preecy. Right, I've got it on a very cracked iPhone. Oh, the ball comes in. Oh, you are thinking about going home for your supper. He's round you. You've dropped it. I mean,
I haven't actually dropped it because I didn't pick it up to drop it. So technically,
I
didn't drop
it. Is that the best excuse of all time? Yeah. He didn't drop it, James. Yeah.
The pitch looks terrible.
It is awful. It was awful that season. We actually there was a big thing about we got a load of worms delivered from Old Trafford to aerate the turf.
No way.
Yeah. Apparently it's something they used to use at Old Trafford. But to be fair, it was the third goal and we were already 2-0 down. The game was lost anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Head's gone by that stage. most watched clip when you search David Priest, Darlington on YouTube. Well, that one
it wouldn't be my incredible save against Bromby when I was playing for Silkeborg. Of course it wouldn't be that one. No.
There's not enough time for me to keep Googling.
No, we can do that next time I'm in.
There are more FA Cup matches to discuss. We have done Leicester, Sheffield United, Huddersfield, Manchester United. Rochdale Spurs is, of course, one of those ones. If you're Tottenham Hotspur fans, you're saying, oh, let's get the excuses in early, as I am a Tottenham Hotspur fan, by saying about the pitch. This is going to be a proper old FA Cup ding-dong, roll out every cliche.
Well, they've rolled out a new pitch, haven't they? It's Spotland. £500,000 they've spent on it, not just for Spurs, obviously, but I think Keith Hill's side is a football-playing side. That's why they've done it. But yeah.
That's what the FA Cup does for you, at least. Gets you a new pitch.
And I think Pochettino will be very surprised at the way that Rochdale play football, because even though they've maybe struggled this season, that might be down to the pitch as well. But I had Keith Hill as a manager at Barnsley, and he's very innovative in the way that he approaches training. A lot of his training sessions, he was always trying to try something different and tweak things. There'd be training sessions where we'd be playing with two balls at the same time. We'd do small sided games where there was no bibs, so everyone had the same strips on, so it forced you to lift your head and remember who was on your side. And every day was always different in training, even though he released me at the end of the season. I mean, I'm not bitter about it.
No, you know what I mean? Didn't sound bitter at all. Spurs got to be wary about this.
Well, I mean, we saw Newport take them to a replay, so yeah, that's the thing with them. You know, we've had those great performances against Madrid, Dortmund, and Juventus, but yeah, this is a completely different proposition. So yeah, I mean, that is another thing that I looked on at that Spurs performance in Wonderwood, because they had to have that replay. They had another game in the fixture list, which you know, does nothing for your rest and recuperation. But so yeah, they'll be looking to probably avoid having to do that again against Rochdale.
I think Harry Kane in one of his post match interviews post Juve, one of the first things he says is, "We've got the FA Cup this weekend." They know the importance of it and wanting to play in it too.
Well, yeah, the chances are he will play, because he's, I think he played the last two rounds. He's played against, certainly against Wimbledon as well. And for all that people you know, say that Pochettino has a money thing, or that he doesn't take especially the Cup seriously, he puts out strong sides, real strong sides. And I think the fact that Youngman's son didn't start the game during the week.
Trippier as well.
Yeah, so they'll probably start as well. So it's not like they're going to be sending out a weakened side.
Never previously competed against each other in the FA Cup. This is the 100th time Rochdale have been in the FA Cup, but only the third time they've ever made it to the fifth round. They've now won 16% of all the FA Cup games they've ever won in the last 5 years.
Wow, that is incredible.
I know.
Yeah.
I didn't write it, but I did read it. Thank you, FA Cup Fact File. Manchester City on the road at Wigan. Wigan, always a tricky place to go. And yet City, depth in squad. I mean, I could just give you all your answers for you. But James is, again, one of those that City will look at and could be a worry over it. If they can do the quadruple.
I mean, you look at some of the games which they've had the most problems with this season. They've actually been in domestic cup competitions. You know, you think about Bristol, you think about Wolves. So, yeah, again, this is a game that they won't be taking lightly from that point of view, I'd say.
Christian Walton, another good young goalkeeper. He's on loan from Brighton. You know, mentioned the Brighton's goalkeeping department before. He's performed very well for them. And if they're going to get anything out of this game, he's going to have to do it again.
Jules, before he left, high-fiving you all, spoke briefly about Chelsea up against Hull City. Winners against the runners-up. Both clearly have been there and done it. Hull need a bit of a respite this season. Well, fans need a bit of a respite this season.
Well, I mean, could be a double relegation for them, which... Yeah, I think Leonard Slutsky there, previous manager to Nigel Adkins coming in, anticipated, because I think he was worried about the lack of business that they were doing in the summer. There are, three Chelsea loan players in that squad? Yeah, because he thought, because of his relationship with Roman Abramovich, you know, he could help bring those kind of that calibre of player in. But even under Adkins, they haven't had that kind of new manager bounce. They've won at the weekend against Forest, but it's very worrying for them.
I wonder if we're going to get a double relegation. I wonder if it's ever happened before, a double relegation from Hull and Sunderland from the Premier League last season and then again this season. I don't think I can't have happened before.
A double-double relegation?
Double-double, yeah.
Double-double trouble for both of them. That's really poor, and I apologise on behalf of my family and me and everyone else included that just had to listen to that. Who would that hurt more, Sunderland or Hull?
Oh, Sunderland, definitely. I mean...
You don't think they've got enough resources to then ping back up?
No. Not even at League One. Even if they stay in the Championship this season, which is looking highly unlikely now. I mean, I'm a Sunderland fan. It's difficult to be positive about anything at the moment, about their situation. And if they stay in the Championship next year, they're still going to have a budget available to them that's sort of, I don't know, would be struggle to get them out of League One. So it's, you can hear.
Yeah. Should we brighten things up?
Go on then.
For fans of West Brom and Southampton to go up against each other. I mean, if ever there was one that needed a bit of a relieving from a kicker, that's West Brom Southampton, isn't it?
Well, the winner of this game is going to be one who's the least worst.
Which will be? I mean, that's right up there with the soft hand, hard hand.
It is. I was at the Chelsea West Brom game on Monday night, and West Brom didn't play too badly. It didn't look like a side who would sort of. Who were down and out. They still like they've got they have got a little bit of quality there. Ben Foster's probably playing as well as he has done in the last few seasons. He can rightly be mentioned, sort of maybe being able to sneak in the World Cup squad. It depends what happens with Joe Hart, really. But yeah, I don't know. Southampton.
It's the minute Pads we talk all... Sunderland, it's all gone downhill from there.
We're going to be depressed now, aren't we?
Anyway, we're trying to jelly baby.
Pards loves this competition.
Yeah.
You know, with Palace, West Ham, he's gone deep in it. Remember they played a fortnight ago. Southampton beat them at the Hawthorns 3-2. That was a Southampton side that up until then had really struggled to score goals. I didn't think that West Brom were all that bad against Chelsea on Monday night, but it is a problem that you then lose Daniel Sturridge after what? The game had just kicked off and then he's now going to be out. So the striker you brought in to hopefully score you the goals to keep you up is now out, and the striker who could fire you into the next round is out as well. So, yeah, that's a problem. What I would say about Southampton is surely Premier League survival means an awful lot to them. They've been to a Wembley, they've been to a cup final only last year. Does this... Where do their priorities lie? But, you know, I think... I'm going to go for Southampton as well, maybe on this.
Yeah, I mean the only thing that's differentiates the sides really, or that West Brom have got in their favour, is they do look like they've got a bit of fight in them, and that's been the biggest problem with Southampton. That's why they've seen the fans sort of the displeasure from the stands, simply because they've lacked fight. And it doesn't matter how good you are, if you haven't got that, then you're not going to win football matches.
And as James said, West Brom do have the secret weapon, which is Pards.
If you're going to be correct about Pards, his nickname is actually Handsome.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, it is my house anyway. Handsome Pards.
On that note, time to get the odds from Paddy Power with Ian McIntosh.
Thanks, Caroline. I'm on the line now with Amy Jones, making her Totally Football Show debut from Paddy Power. Amy, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Excellent stuff. Loads of things I need to ask you. First of all, Carlos Carvajal having such a great start with Swansea. FA Cup tie this weekend. What are his chances of getting him to the final?
Well, he's obviously come in and he's absolutely smashed it. I think he's got about 14 points in 7 games in the league. So, you know, you can't knock that. But 16-1 he is to get to the final. But I think to myself, well, you know, you had such a good go at it. Why not? Why not go for it?
Got to get past his old team first, Sheffield Wednesday. And Coventry, they're still in it as well. Not doing so well in the league. Slipped off a bit in recent weeks. But what can we get on them to beat Brighton in the FA Cup and party like it's 1987?
Well, the big outsiders are 17-2. But, you know, if there's any competition that it's going to happen in, it's definitely the Cup, so why not?
Rochdale, can they follow Juventus's lead and take an early lead against Spurs this weekend on the off chance that game actually goes ahead?
Yeah, so the 5-1 to take the early lead, which obviously, if the game was anything like the Juventus game in the week, I don't think we'd be complaining, so...
Absolutely, and I'll tell you who's had a bad week, Alan Pardew. Not only was he walloped 3-0 by Chelsea at the beginning of the week, but that boardroom has been cleansed. The board clearly not very happy. What are the odds that he can even see out the season?
Well, West Brom have only won one of their last 25 Premier League matches, so it's not looking good for them. And he's 7-2 now not to be the manager on the final day of the season.
Thanks to Ian and to Amy, of course. You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Thank you to Jules, who's been mainly the silent partner for this ending, and why wouldn't you be? To James and to David too. If you want to get in touch with the show, thank you to everyone that has at The Totally Show. James is back next week from his curling adventures. It's been a delight though. Thank you.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.